Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women of Wisdom, everyone. And today I'm blessed and honored to have a person who has dedicated her life to education. And I welcome to the program Mary Grace. And one of the main things we're going to talk about is volunteering in these countries that understand the gift of education, but yet they don't. And so welcome, Mary Grace. And that leads me to my first question. Why did you start doing this, of all going to South Sudan and volunteering?
Well, that's a takes a long answer. I heard through my home church that, who had been supporting a specific Catholic religious organization that does education there, I knew that South Sudan had chosen, when they became independent country, English as one of their official languages. And they have over 100 different languages in South Sudan. And so to have a unifying language is really vital for a country. So I offered to go, and they said yes. I went and had a really amazing summer teaching there. I taught in the public schools there and in the private schools that these sisters had set up. But I also, in the afternoons, hung out with a group of just kids whose families couldn't even afford to send them to the free public schools. So it was just kind of serendipity. God worked it all out, and it was an incredible experience.
Wow, that's amazing. And you don't happen to have a education degree behind you yourself. Anyone could go over and volunteer, correct? They don't necessarily have to have an education degree or formalized training in education, do I?
That is absolutely correct. I have an associate degree in physical therapy, but I've been teaching English. I have been teaching English for decades, mostly English to immigrant adults, and working with some children's programs as well. So it's more experience and dedication. The Montessori, Maria Montessori, the doctor who started the Montessori schools, she said that she actually didn't like to have trained teachers. What she liked were teachers who were motivated, engaged, loved learning, loved kids, and were creative. And she felt that training sometimes takes away the spontaneity, the child-centered or student-led quest for knowledge, and dampened down some of that excitement about learning.
Well, that is amazing that you say that, because I'm in education myself. I have a formalized degree, and I have all this educational training from a special ed point of view. And what I'm noticing is that kids with all this specialized training don't know necessarily what to do with it when it comes to the special ed kid. So
That's true. I am
curious as to your perspective of being a teacher and going down to South Sudan and then teaching these kids English without you having an education degree, per se, if that makes sense.
Sure. So because I've been teaching English for so long, and I fell into it because my father was a linguist. Language was really important in our home. My father spoke 7 languages, but we just had these great conversations about language and about learning. And I've worked with little kids and as a tutor for decades. We homeschooled. I think when one is engaged in teaching children, either in the home or in classroom settings for so long, there I think some of it is innate, but sometimes we learn tricks of the trade, or I call them juggling tips, where you learn that some things are go-tos. So I know that I can teach the verb to be with this thing and with this and with this. So there are different techniques that one learns along the way, even without training in an official classroom setting where one would get a teaching degree.
I
actually had the wonderful opportunity of training our teachers and training tutors to teach English. So it's a wonderful thing to be able to do. I think some of it is just a personality, you know, when one has a kind of a heart for it and I think there is a teacher personality. And so
there is a teacher personality.
Really love it.
People say to me, you have the patience of a saint, and I'm like, you either love it or you don't love it, because
that's right
it's just, you either, this is something you are born to do, but or you love it or you don't love it. And now I'm realizing that it's getting tougher and tougher to teach these kids, because now this is a fault of their own. Out of the womb, they have technology, this next generation. So that leads me to my next question. Obviously, in South Sudan, they don't necessarily have technology like we do, like the iPad and a cell phone and a computer. So how do you teach without technology? I mean, we're so used to technology. I think that would be the hardest thing for me, not to have access to internet connection to do research on how to teach these kids English.
Well, that's, you know, it's interesting that you said what you're used to. You were so used to technology. And of course, the people there are not used to technology. Most of the students I had no access to technology whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the adults I met had cell phones, but almost all of the cell phones were charged in a solar booth at the local market. There's no electricity grid in South Sudan. It's all solar powered, which is great, but there needs to be more of it. And so, I planned my things ahead of time. I printed out things to take with me. I took games with me. I took different kinds of things so that I could teach with what I had. And I only needed to, I was only there for 2 months to teach for that summer.
It basically, you did a lot of pre-planning on your
end. I did.
While you were in the U.S.
Although you know that teaching is much of it, one might plan four or five things per session and yet do only one, and the rest of it is spontaneous, and you go off on tangents, and you have to teach this, and you recognize they're missing, which is necessary for the next step. So I actually loved, one of my favorite things was with the very young children and with my little afternoon ad hoc class that I had every afternoon of the street kids. It was just almost all teaching with song and writing in the dirt. It was great.
Well,
teaching with song
is something I'm used to, but we'll get to that story later on. But writing in the dirt, not something that I'm used to, and teaching in a foreign country is not something you can do on a whim. You have to be prepared for it, as we said, because teaching in a foreign country is different than teaching in the U.S. And are the language barriers different, or are the teaching standards the same?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see. When I was with the youngest children and in my group of kids, the neighborhood kids, there were no other English speakers. I was with them alone almost all of the time. And so it was sign and drawing pictures and making symbols and lots of laughter and giggles and writing in the dirt, pointing. There was just a lot of sign language, impromptu sign language interspersed with whatever I was trying to teach them. And it worked. I mean, some of the kids were definitely, they would come up to me in the streets, and it was great. It was really fun. So that part of it was wonderful. One of the groups I most delighted teaching was a group of adult men who, they actually were looking for women too, but a group of adult men who had come in from as far away as 7 days walk so that they could take a 6-month class on leadership in the church and communities. So they were studying for 6 months and then heading back into their very rural, isolated villages to be leaders in their communities. And they were just a remarkably wonderful group of men. In that group, in that class, it was just 12 men. In that class, I had a huge range. I had men who spoke no English and men who were able to communicate with pretty good facility and in English. So I set up pairs, the men who were better at English. I worked with them intensively part of the time, but I also had them teaching the other men and teaching me at the same time. And we would do translations. We worked on... I'm sorry?
How cool is that? I mean,
it was wonderful. And these men, oh my goodness, it was just a delight. Kind, good-hearted, hard-working men. It was wonderful African men.
And I am going to bring up a person who's near and dear to your heart, and you are traveling back to pick up this person. So I've been told by you, and this person's name is Khan, and he has amputee. He's an amputee. Could you please explain that story? That's why I'm so sold by what you're doing in South Sudan, because of Khan's story. And by the way, his picture attracted me. I'm like, that picture melted my heart. I'm like, oh boy, this is not good.
Yeah.
So how is he responding to all this? I mean, when are you going back to pick him up?
Right. I leave June 9th to try to fetch this little guy and bring him here for free medical care, which I've lined up in the local medical community. We have he's an amputee, and he's struggling with recurrent and persistent intensive infections that he simply can't shake. The amputation happened when he was quite young. He's 7 now. I met him when he was 5 in the summer of 2013, and his amputation was above, he still had his knee. But 2 weeks after I left, they re-amputated because of these infections. They re-amputated to above his knee. And since September of 2013, he still has not healed from that amputation. And so I just, I got a note saying that he really needed to get away to a place where he could heal. So I'm trying to work it out so that he can get here where he can be in a clean environment. Americans cannot imagine. Like, if you think of the muddiest, muckiest football field scene, It's not even close to what Main Street looks like there. So
No, I could only imagine. I could only imagine.
yeah.
That's why I say doing a volunteer teaching in a third world country isn't for the weak, isn't for the weak at all. You kind of have to be put your heart and soul into this because it's not easy. It's not easy.
Right. Well, I mean, I think if they just said, yeah, here's the kid, you can keep him for the year, that would have been fine. I deal with people much more than I deal with paperwork, and the paperwork has been significant. I have two dear friends who have been incredibly kind and generous with their time. One has been organizing the donated airline miles for me, and another did all the footwork in Washington to get my visas, my passport to different visa, country visas. Embassies so that they could put my visas in and so I've had wonderful support and people have been donating to, at a GoFundMe site called Get Khan a Leg, and that's been very helpful so that we can pay for the extra everything. There are some significant expenses, but
I
it's
bet.
coming along, it's coming along great. And my plan is to have this child in my home with me for up to 1 year while he gets healed from the amputation itself, from the amputation wound and these infections, and then they're planning on sending him back with a leg. We've got a pediatrician working with him who's going to be working with him, volunteering, all of these volunteering their
Oh my
incredible
God.
skills and time. Oh, it's phenomenal. And
It's
we've got a surgical amputee group that is willing to do his in case he has to have it reworked. But we don't have a hospital, but we do have a clinic. So if it's a small enough procedure that he has to just have it reworked at all, hopefully they'll be able to do it in a clinic. That would be also provided. And then we also have a prosthetics group who's willing to work with him. So these doctors have just been phenomenally gracious and generous. And even I had to delay the trip. I was hoping to go in May, couldn't go in May. So now we're hoping to go in, I mean, I'm sorry, not in May. I was hoping to be there and be back by April. But that's couldn't happen because of this plethora of paperwork. So,
Oh
but
boy,
hopefully he'll be with me for up to 1 year of time, and then I'll take him back. And my hope is that when I return him to his grandmother and his community, that I'll be able to again stay for that summer and teach again. So for that summer. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about all of it. And
explain this to me. So you're okay. You're being a surrogate mom, so to speak, to Khan while he's here in North Carolina.
that's correct.
And so how, which leads me to my next question, how does this all work? Because you're not necessarily adopting Khan and you're not necessarily, you're only being the angel guide, so to speak, to get him to the US and get him help. But how does this all work if one of my listeners is listening to your story and they want to adopt a kid from a third world country, but not adopt a kid?
If they want to adopt a kid or just help a kid.
Help be a liaison between the third world country, be a liaison between the third world country and the US.
Well, I really have no idea. I'm just doing it for this one kid at this point because the need was there. And so that's what has led to this adventure. I certainly learned a lot. We've learned so much. My two stalwart supporters and I have learned so much about visas and passports and national IDs and birth certificates in a war zone. And so we've learned quite a bit, but I don't, I mean, I kind of feel like somebody ought to set up some kind of a foundation where if there's a child with this kind of medical need, there could
Oh,
be a
yes.
host family. But one of the concerns I have is that I want him to want to go back to South Sudan, to his grandmother, to Africa. I want him to go back healed and well and able to live, not just survive, but to really thrive in his environment. And I think having English will help him do that. There are his ability to speak English will directly correlate to his ability to get a job as he gets older, because there's just so many things, more opportunities he'll be able to access if he can speak English. And if he's here for almost a year, I mean, if he's better before the year is up, then we have to send him back, you know, when he's better. But if he's here for up to a year, that child's going to be speaking English pretty well. He won't. He's only seven, so he probably won't be writing English really well. But his English will still be better than 90% of South Sudanese English speakers. So,
well, congratulations on that.
Yeah, I think that'll be one of the gifts that will come of this. But I'm trying to be careful in terms of what I expose him to. I'm not going to let him see any movies while he's here. The child has never flushed a toilet. He's going to be, you know, using a bathroom. He's going to be using, you know, sinks, and, you know, it's just a completely different cultural reality. School, I mean, school is going to be so different. Food is going to be so different. I'm ordering some sorghum grain so that I can try to, I'm sure it won't taste anything like his good food from home, but I'm going to try to have something that's at least somewhat familiar. I'm looking for Nuer speakers. His language is called Nuer. I'm looking for speakers who can communicate with him. I have two people who are happy to talk with him by phone, but they're in Denver, Colorado. So I'm hoping to find more people in this area with whom he can speak his mother tongue, maintain that mother tongue so that he can go back and just jump right back
in. So basically what you want us to do, go to the campaign, donate, and then you will, obviously the campaign is not for necessarily him speaking English or necessarily him speaking his mother tongue. The campaign is basically for medical expenses. Am I correct?
Well, actually, the campaign is mostly for his medical expenses. Hopefully will be covered. I think we might have to pay for, you know, things like antibiotics and probiotics and other, you know, sundries. But hopefully most of his medical care is going to be covered. Most of the money is going toward is travel, transportation, visa fees, passport, buying a passport. There are just so many different things. Staying, we're going to have to stay someplace. We've got a free place to stay in Nairobi, which is great because we're going to have to be there for about 9 days while his American visa is being processed, hopefully. We're going to have to be about 8 or 9 days in South Sudan, in Juba. We're going to be staying there, excuse me, at a guest house, which will be far less money than a hotel, and more to my liking anyway. So the expenses are not so much medically related as transportation related. We have to prove also to the U.S. government that we get him back to South Sudan. And so we have to have the money in the checking account to be able to show them and say, look, here's the money. I've got a chart showing the donated miles and their expiration date, saying, you know, we have these miles with which we can fly the child back. And his grandmother loves him, and he loves his grandmother. And I just want this child, this particular child, to be able to survive, to heal, and to not have to struggle with infections constantly. I mean, how hearts ache when they think about a child having infections for years and years and years. And yet, if he were here for a time of healing, he can get shock of that, and he can go back with, you know, sure, a stump of a leg, but also a prosthetic, and hopefully no more infections, you know. So
we need to rescue all. We not only need to rescue Khan. We need to rescue these kids who don't have the resources we do.
Right, yes. I mean, this is one child. This is just
one child. Boy.
Billions who need help. And yet I just feel, and yet, you know, they asked me to help this one child, and it's one child. Just a couple days after we arrived, I went to the Doctors Without Borders Hospital to visit with one of the sisters with whom I was staying, and we saw this little baby who had actually died on the way into the hospital. And one of the nurses there, the woman who ran the labor and delivery ward, a lovely Kenyan nurse midwife, told me that they worked for 4 hours to save this little baby boy, and they saved him. And it just made me think, you know, babies are dying constantly in these places, and yet the Doctors Without Borders Hospital spent 4 hours on one little
four
baby. And it just made kind of a shift in my heart and my thinking that it all starts with a relationship with one child.
Yep, and all starts with one, and one can turn into two. Two can turn into three.
Amen.
Yep. Yep. It all starts with one, and one incredible team, and one incredible angel, which is you, to help this process go. I mean, I have never met anyone that wants to see this kid succeed so badly. I mean, it's can't think of a better way to spend June and a year with this kid. And let's see this kid progress. That's my hope anyway. I don't know about you, but that's my hope, certainly, and I will definitely keep in contact and let me know what I can do to help, other than share your story on Women of Wisdom.
Well, that's
but
it's
it was wonderful having you and having you tell us a little bit about the culture of Africa and about the teaching experience.
Oh, thank you. It was delightful talking with you, and I so appreciate you sharing the story of this one little guy.
Well,
all kids are precious.
I would like to mention the website again, the GoFundMe website for this campaign, and it's GoFundMe, Get Khan a Leg. And
yes, and his name is spelled Khan, Khan.
Yes.
And they can also find it through my name, Mary Grace.
Yes.
Or my zip code, 27705.
27. Say that zip code again.
27705.
Okay. So either way, if they type in that zip code, it will pop up on GoFundMe.
It should. Yes, I think so. I'm trying to find it myself.
Well, thank you, Mary Grace, and enjoy your evening, and I'll keep up with you on your progress, and let's hope we can help the next generation.
Amen. Thank you so much.
Thank
Thanks for what
you.
You do. It's
bye.
Great. Bless you. Bye-bye.